Hello and welcome to True Romance. This is Devin Leary.
And this is Carolina Barlow.
Ever heard of her? Probably not.
Probably not, even though I did that thing where you look at like what people have Googled about you, like you put in your name and see what comes up.
Oh, I've never done that.
Please tell me you have so I don't feel alone.
I've never thought to do that. I always do like just my name.
Okay, well, I did my name. What comes up usually is Carolina Barlow, True Romance, Carolina Barlow, Ron Burgundy podcast, Carolina Barlow left hand, because I have an injured left hand that I've been wearing a glove
people
on.
People actually Google that?
Yes.
Who?
I don't know, but it's one of the things that comes up when I put in my name.
Okay, I'm doing this now.
Carolina Barlow, car accident, obviously, my claim to fame. Carolina Barlow, boyfriend, which has always been something that I've I'm hoping that they're asking, just like I Google, like, you know, the Bradley Cooper girlfriend. But there's also Carolina Barlow net worth that comes up sometimes. Beth actually texted it to me. She was like, do you know that when you Google your name, Carolina Barlow net worth comes up? And I was like, I would love to submit it and be like, yeah, that's going to be in the three figures.
I just want to say that when I Google my name, the things that come up are Devin Leary, NC State, Devin Leary 24/7, Devin Leary stats, Devin Leary leg, Devin Leary rivals, Devin Leary podcast. That one's for me. Devin Leary,
Leary
college
rivals.
It's all about, yeah, what's my rivals? Devin Leary wants to add to NC State's. What the fuck? It's all this football player.
I think
player.
That you might have a football player, yeah.
But what does he look like? Oh, no. Oh, no. Okay. Well, that's me. And I'm happy that that's my legacy, I guess.
Devin, how's your week going?
My week is pretty just like, as my mom recently said yesterday, it seems like you have a lot of mild annoyances going on at once. And I think that's a fair thing to say. I have been changing antidepressant medications for to treat my OCD. It gives me night sweats. This is a specific struggle too. When you're a hypochondriac, it becomes increasingly difficult to tell whether you have like an actual health problem or it's nothing and you've made it up.
Yeah.
And so like I've noticed significant hair loss for the past 3 or 4 months. And because I'm such a hypochondriac, I was like, oh, I'm just like making up that this is an actual problem. Like this happens. It's normal. I was Googling it all the time, but I was like, I don't think I have any of this stuff. Like whatever. And obviously I felt embarrassed that we had just recorded the Bald Talk app and I was like, oh, I don't even know anything about balding. Meanwhile, it was happening to me. Meanwhile, it could happen to you and it happened to me. Yeah, so I was like, oh, this is fine. But then like one night I noticed an actual bald spot and I was like, oh, fuck. And so I went to a dermatologist. Then like I go to the dermatologist and she recommends, like, I got blood tests done and I was hoping for her to be like, wait, you're like making this up, you're a hypochondriac, this isn't a problem. But she was like, oh yeah, it's like substantial balding spots. And I was like, okay, well, at least you're honest. And then she ordered me to get blood tests and to do Rogaine, which I think is hilarious for some reason. Like the fact that I'm purchasing Rogaine.
I imagine you hiding it like Aiden in Sex and the City.
And then I also had to, or didn't have to, but my dermatologist recommended that I try this supplement that was like super expensive. But obviously at this point, I'm trying everything. I used this gift card to Sephora that my aunt got me for Christmas. And I bought Kerastase shampoo.
Oh yeah,
I am a lifelong Pantene Herbal Essences don't buy fancy shampoo person, but I bought this fancy shampoo. I bought these supplements. I bought these gummies for your hair. The dermatologist
recommended. Are we taking Fish oil, vitamin D, are those all under the umbrella?
So those are all in my multivitamin. So I didn't think I needed to take that.
Babe,
but I
you got to take fish oil. And I mean, I'm talking about the fishy fish oil supplements that are just full of fishy juice.
Yeah, I will do that because I don't eat fish. So I probably am lacking in that. But anyway, so I tried this like really fancy supplement that was really expensive called Nutrafol because the dermatologist recommended it. And I was like, this isn't helping the debt that I'm in, but I'm going to do it anyway. And it made me so sick to my stomach. Like,
aww.
I was like violently ill all day. Like, I never get stomach problems, but like, so that's how I knew. I was like, this never happens to me. This is really weird. And then like, because then she told me to try like just half the dose. And so I tried half the dose and I still got really sick. And the funny thing that I realized is that like, I have never not had an appetite. Like, you know, some people are like, oh, I'm like really sick to my stomach and I don't have an appetite. Like, and then I was upset because we got this ice cream delivered, like this Jenny's ice cream. And I was like so excited, but I was like sick to my stomach. And so I was like, fuck, like I want to eat this. And I was like, I feel so shitty, but I'm gonna eat it anyway. Like, I just have to eat it anyway. So I was like, he's violently ill, but eating ice cream anyway, which is not a great idea. So anyway, these are just like all these mild things. And then I've had really bad allergies and I'm just like, everything is just kind of like, ugh, just stop. But the bright side, long story long, as my friend Tess would say, of this week has been that I babysat for, I mean, I dog sat for my family's dogs with my brother and my boyfriend. And it was so cute and fun because we were like, then normally like when my mom's here and my dad's here, they're like the alphas that the dogs are obsessed with. But suddenly we were. And so they like the dogs followed us everywhere. And like Eddie slept in our bed and like he's so cute. But I became increasingly like I like had psychosis from how obsessed I was with the dogs. And like I was at one point we were watching this show, Your Honor, which on Showtime, which is really good. But spoiler alert, this dog got sick in the show.
I know.
And like without realizing it, I leaned over to Eddie and said, we're always going to take care of you. And like, I just constantly found myself being like, oh, what do you want to do now? Oh, you want to go in the other room? Okay. Oh, are you tired? Okay. You want to take a nap? Oh, we're not going to take a nap right now. Okay. We're going to do this. And I was like, I am losing my, and like everything, my mom was like, you have Munchausen's with the dogs. Cause I, every 5 seconds I was like, well, Bowie's limping. And like, he just went to itch himself, but then he stopped trying to itch himself. And Eddie's been itching himself like pretty consistently. So I'm just concerned that like something's happening.
I completely identify. I went to the dog park a while ago before LA's caseload blew up and obviously all social distance outside. But I realized that no one else in the park was talking to their dog like I was. Like everyone was like, here, Biscuit. Here, Trixie. And I was like, hello, little girl. Come here. Yes, I'm very cute. Oh, you like me so much. Oh, yes, 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 yes. And I was like, I finally understood that I was unlike, like I am the girl in the dog park all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Who is crazy.
It's hard.
And it really gave me sympathy for the girl who I used to see at my old dog park pre-pandemic, who randomly would ask people to hang out with her. Like, she was like, hey, you want to hang out anytime? Could be fun.
No?
And I was like, okay. No.
How has your week been, Carol?
It has been a fucking wild mess of a ride. And I really mean that. You know, I'm not one of those people who's like 2020, right? Oh my God, 2021 is going to be the same. No, I
know.
I
the
had
memes that are like the memes 2021 are coming. Side eye.
I really am already sick of the memes about how crazy these years are. But start to the week was great. Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff won the Georgia runoffs, proving everyone wrong. I don't think anyone thought that was going to happen. I am always a radical optimist because it makes me too depressed to be pessimistic. I gave until it hurt to that race. My family wrote 300 letters. I got an absurd amount of swag that I thought I was going to give to my family members as Christmas gifts, but then I realized it's kind of an annoying gift to get is just like random politician swag. So I just have a bunch of Ossoff Warnock swag in my house. But, you know, you kind of you laid on all on the field, as some men say, and you see you expect nothing back, you know, especially in political races for the past 4 years. And to see them win gave me a lot of faith. My mom was very grateful that she had written so many letters. She wrote half of those letters, and it was a really beautiful night. I was just on and off crying out of gratitude. Oh, and then the violent coup happened in Washington, and
that one.
And that was pretty fucking insane and horrific. And then a loved one of mine tested positive for COVID that I had been exposed to. So I'm now in day two of my 14-day quarantine. But I drive by people on the street in LA who are eating without masks on and their servers are wearing face shields. It's what's happening? Your server is saying that they don't want to die and you're saying you don't care if you're killing them.
I know. I really, first of all, I'm so sorry that you and your family are going through this. And I like hate on and judge people's COVID behavior on social media, but I've really been struggling with watching Real Housewives because I'm like, okay, like, there's the part of me that wants to defend them at all times. So I'm like, okay, I think they're being like really careless, but part of me wants to be like, but they're okay,
their family.
But they are getting tested. But the thing that I struggle with so much is like seeing them go into restaurants or outside restaurants and being served by these people who have to wear PPE and they are just like sitting there gabbing like blah, 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 with no mask on. And it's so fucked up.
I understand our government has completely failed us and that small businesses are taking a hit right now. Some of them aren't going to be able to recover. It's so unfair. It's so cruel. The cruelty is never going to be forgiven. You cannot make health decisions for 1,000 people, which is what you're doing. It sounds insane. Right. But in South Korea, they linked one person being COVID positive at a buffet to 1,000 people getting COVID. That's cuckoo loco pants. So anyway, I'm very angry. I'm very defensive. I'm very resentful. And at the same time, I'm just feeling very lucky that my loved one's symptoms aren't too insane. And I think we'll get through it. And, you know, it's really given me an opportunity to try getting into the Real Housewives franchise because I always feel like it's been sort of the Grand Canyon between you and I.
It has been a struggle. The biggest struggle is like, yes, I have many friends who don't watch Housewives. Yes, I have family members who don't watch Housewives. But with you, it's been hard because I know you will love it. Like, that's the struggle is that I'm like, but I know that this is something that will bring you so much joy. So it's hard for me to like just watch you go without it. Like if someone has gone their whole life without therapy and like therapy would just give them so much joy and like free them of so much trauma.
Right.
That's how I feel about you is I'm like, but this is just right on the other side for you. And also like what I wouldn't give to have unseen all of these franchises from episode one and get to see them for the first time again. Like when I first saw Real Housewives of New York, I was in high school. I didn't appreciate that when I first saw season one. And yes, I rewatched it a second time, but I would have appreciated it so much more if I could see it for the first time now as an adult.
I'm going to start with Salt Lake City because I want to get in on the conversation.
Okay, but just so you know, it's not that good of drama yet.
Okay. Okay. Well, I started watching Atlanta last night from season one.
Yep. Yep. I would like to rewatch Atlanta from season one. I have not rewatched it. I've only watched like a first time through.
So far, my favorite part is Kim, who is the one white star on the show, her relationship with a mysterious boyfriend named Big Papa.
Yep. This was so many Kims ago. Like, Kim has become so many different people since this. And, like, I've gone through so many different phases of like hating her and then loving her and then hating her and then loving her. Now I think I hate her, but I still, when I watch her for more than 5 minutes, I do get swayed and I'm like, wait, I actually think she's a good mom.
I did identify with her at one point, and it's not the way it sounds, but she's buying, I think, an Escalade from a car dealership.
What?
How do you pronounce it?
Escalade?
Is it Escalade?
Escalade. Come on.
Escalade.
You gave like a little, Hilaria twist to that. I have my Baldunitos and my Escalade.
My family, my loved one who has COVID, they are from España. And she's buying this huge SUV for $68,000 cash. Like, she just writes them a check. And she's like, is it the best? Is that a fair price? I don't know. But am I driving an Escalade off the lot right now? Yes. And it reminds me of the night that I bought my Prius, my used Prius, and I was just signing paperwork. I was like, I will pay more money to get out of here. Like, I do not know what I am paying right now. I do not know the monthly charge I'm signing up for. But I would rather go into debt, which is what I did, than try to figure this out.
I know. I've learned so much about tax from Real Housewives. Like, I'm like, oh, okay. So that's what happened if you don't pay your taxes. I see now. And also, like, you can just live as a rich person and it won't catch up to you till years later. Like, a lot of them have no money, but they just like buy these giant houses on credit and then they're like, oh, I guess I'm going to jail because I didn't do that. Or as Teresa Giudice says, I just signed the papers. I didn't know.
I identify with that. I really do.
I do too. I mean, I accidentally signed up for a $50 a month Savage Fenty subscription.
No.
I couldn't tell you how. I made one purchase there and then I started seeing every month. I was like, wait, $49.95 multiple months in a row. And I was like, oh, I'm being defrauded. Like, the first time I was like, I'm being defrauded. Someone spent $49.95 at Savage Fenty on my card. And then the next month it happened again. And I was like, wait, what is this? And it was like VIP subscription.
Oh no.
I was like, what? So then I had to call Chase and be like, so I misreported a fraud. It was actually me who's been spending $50 a month at Savage X Fenty. So fuck me, I guess.
It reminds me of a Maria Bamford bit where she was like, am I going to sign up for a gym membership? Yes. Am I going to spend $110 every month without going to the gym once? Yes.
Like, oh my God.
I did that once where I got a gym membership near my house and it was something like $80 a month. And then when I did the math later, I was like, I spent $300 for two trips to the gym. And, you know, and those trips were kind of like me sitting on an exercise bike, looking at my phone.
Yeah.
My body hasn't reflected those two visits.
I had a gym membership once in my life and it was to David Barton Gym because there was a David Barton Gym fully in the building that I lived in. So I was like, oh, I guess I'll sign up for this. And it was like discounted because I lived in the building. I went 3 to 4 times and then I like forgot about it. And then for months I was like so self-loathing. Like, I just have to cancel this subscription. Like, this is so crazy. But every month I just don't cancel it. But I like didn't check my credit card statements. I just was like, every month I'm paying for this gym and it's crazy. And then I called them to cancel it and they were like, we've been out of business for a very long time. And I don't know if you've noticed, but like, we are not in your building anymore. There's like an empty space. And I was like, haven't noticed. And good to know.
Thank you so much.
So yeah, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back with some headlines for the week.
I want true romance.
And we're back with True Romance. We have some headlines to go over quickly. I know it's been a while, but literally the only thing that we have been thinking about is the democracy hanging on by a thread. But we finally gotten back into what really matters, which is Harry Styles and Olivia Wilde are now dating. I'm really happy about this. I think that every newly divorced or broken up woman, any single mom deserves Harry Styles for a few weeks.
Yes, I agree. And I think he has like a bit of a thing for older women, which I think is attractive.
So hot.
Him.
The only thing I have against Harry Styles is the butterfly tattoo on his stomach. That's my only issue.
Why? I like that. The only thing that I have against Harry Styles is that he hit the brakes too soon and got 20 stitches in a hospital room, and he started crying, and so did Taylor. And then when the sun came up, she was looking at him. I just think, like, why did he hit the brakes too soon? Like, be careful.
Yeah,
I know
it's
you're not used
careful.
To driving on our side of the road, but just be more careful. And thank you, because 1989 is one of the best albums of all time, and he inspired it, and like, it just makes me so happy, and I'll never forget when it came out. So
that was very much when he was still in his teeny bopper phase. I really love this. Really, I mean, he's never, ever, ever going out of style. I really love his style right now. I love the dresses. I love the necklaces. I love the sunglasses. I almost bought a beanie because he wore it. But then it was freakishly expensive, and I just couldn't justify spending that much money on a hat. I also want to get... I don't want to spend too much time on their newly found bliss, because I think we also have an obligation to discuss Kim and Kanye's dissolution.
Yeah.
This was coming for years and years and years. I really feel bad for Kim here, which I don't often, but she was in a relationship with a crazy person, and they have four children together. And I read that they just kept on, they had kids that, because they were trying to save their relationship.
I mean, I don't know if I've talked about my theory about her being asexual on this podcast before, have I?
No, but she definitely is.
Okay, so there was an empath on the podcast Bitch Sesh with Casey Wilson and Danielle Schneider. It's my favorite podcast. And they had an empath on to discuss like his empathic views on the Housewives. And he argued that Erica Jane could be asexual because he said people who are so outwardly sexual, like abnormally outwardly sexual, are often not truly sexual in their intimate lives. And that screams Kim to me, because she is so, like, her whole brand is her sex appeal. But at the same time, like, can you actually imagine her having sex? I mean, I know we've all seen the tape, but she didn't seem that into it, and she was high. And like, I just remember there was this one time, the time that sealed the deal for me was there was this episode where Chloe comes into Kim's bedroom. Kim is laying in bed and Chloe's like, what's up? And Kim says, Kanye and I just had sex like 500 times in a row. That's what a 12-year-old boy says who's a virgin and watched porn once. Like, it's physically impossible to have sex 500 times in a row. And why would you say that as an adult about your husband? Like, that's not true. Like, just say like, oh, I just had sex with my husband and it was like great. Don't say we just had sex 500 times in a row, because that's not true. So I think she's asexual. She doesn't need sex. That's amazing for her. Congrats. I think she did love Kanye as a person. I mean, it's probably why she's so successful. She's not held back by like wanting sex. And I think that her and Kanye did love each other as people, but I think they had an arrangement in the sense of being married. He rebranded her, she rebranded him in many ways, and the arrangement stopped working because he's unhinged and needs psychological help, and he's a Republican ploy now. So
I think a lot of people took advantage of his mental illness. I think indulging it in any way, Courtney, aka Courtney wearing a hat that said vote for Kanye, I was like, yeah, what are you talking about? This is a person who's having a mental break. You know, like, I do think Kanye, prior to losing his mind, is one of the best rappers of all time, is one of the best writers of all time, is genuinely, yes, so funny, so smart, so political. Let's never forget him saying that George Bush didn't care about black people during Hurricane Katrina, and how at the time was controversial. And now, you know, while everyone's become more progressive, we just see how accurate it was.
How was it accurate? No, I'm kidding.
What do you mean? And I think wealth can make people insane. And I think
100%
the Kardashians' wealth is insane. I think it's not normal. I don't think it's good. I don't think it's necessary. There's a reason why I missed the earlier seasons. They were more human. They were more like human beings.
So great. Yeah.
They were funny. And now, you know, Khloe has had a face transplant. Scott is dating, you know, high school freshmen. Yep. And buying $60 million houses with them. And we just have to act like all this is normal. Mason is like going to have like a sneaker line in like 2 days and is going to be a DJ and already like answers Instagram lives, which I think is so funny.
I love that so much.
He's wearing like Chrome Hearts hoodies.
I love Mason. Mason for life.
Mason.
I
Team
love
Mason.
Mason. Mason for more president. Than I love you. Remember that line?
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, yeah, those are the seasons. Like, Courtney, come back with my baby. Yeah. Yeah, Rob and Scott wrestling on a hotel room floor while Chris like,
is screaming.
Scott, stop it.
Love, live for.
It was really like the raw and dirty years. I mean, I'll never forget Kim getting drunk, like, for the first time because she never drank.
I know.
So funny. Yeah, and you know, now it's just this crazy thing where they might be backed by Russia to run for president. Ivanka and Jared have been taking advantage of a mentally ill man to try and win their, you know, fascist president in another term. And, you know, things went down really quickly, really quickly.
Yeah.
So I wish them all the best. I mean, Kim obviously has an amazing lawyer. Laura Wasser, if you missed it, she was on the pod. She's brilliant, fierce. I'm obsessed with Laura Wasser's Instagram presence. She posts like stuff. Like this morning she posted a bowl of Trick cereal and was like, haha, who ordered this? Who says it's just for kids? And I was like, I love that you are the top divorce lawyer in Los Angeles. She also posted a picture of herself in a really hot outfit and was like, today the opposing lawyer told me that I may be in a cuter outfit, but that they were going to win. And after the case was over, I said I was in a cuter outfit and I actually did win. And I was like, okay, you are the popular cool girl.
Yeah, she's amazing.
And we are mere peasants.
I am just going to say that I am glad we're moving towards the tell-all book phase of the Kardashians. We're getting closer and closer. The less famous they become, the closer we are to the tell-all books, and I'm looking forward to that.
As am I.
Before we get into our final topic for today's episode, we just wanted to give you all a little New Year's gift, which is another quarantine segment by our quarantine correspondent, Jesse Konevsky, on a little Canadian masterpiece that we all know and love. Take a listen.
Hey guys, Jesse back again with your true romance quarantine report. One thing I have decided is a healthy way to cope with 2020 is to tackle some things on your to-do list that you've been putting off for years. I thought long and hard about what it is I most wanted to make sure I accomplished this year, and that's why I'm proud to say I finally committed myself to watching all 14 seasons of Degrassi The Next Generation and 4 seasons, bonus seasons if you will, of Degrassi The Next Class. I feel accomplished. I feel proud of myself. I had seen most of them already, but now I know in my heart of hearts that I have truly seen every episode of Degrassi. I feel strong and empowered by this. If you're a Degrassi watcher, you're probably like, hold up right now. What the F is Degrassi The Next Class? Like I said, it's 4 seasons that I consider bonus seasons of the show that were put on Netflix and is now considered a Netflix original teen series. I know you're probably like, wait, Degrassi airs on Noggin or The N or Teen Nick, and that's on Friday nights, so stop with this Netflix crap. But let me give you a brief history of the evolution, and I'll try and keep this brief because Degrassi, it's a journey. It started in the 80s with the class that was like Spike and Snake and that whole crew. I really only know them as Emma's guardians on The Next Generation. Snake eventually becomes Principal Simpson throughout the rest of the seasons, but otherwise we are going to respectfully deem that class irrelevant. Then you get into the more modern kind of 2000s Degrassi, where we get the class that we have come to know and love. You got your Spinner, your Manny Santos, Drake, who was put in a wheelchair by Rick, who also put Terry in a coma. A brief summary of some of the things those kids had to deal with: shootings, rape, drugs, sexual exploitation, eating disorders, gonorrhea outbreaks, stabbings, teen pregnancies, just to name a few things. There was this weird blip in the history of Degrassi where you saw some of those kids go to college, like Emma and Marco and Ellie. And I feel very strongly that we didn't need to see their college experience, and they could have kept that. After they left, some new kids started coming in: Holly J, Sav, Declan, Fiona, followed by what felt like the longest class of kids ever: Claire, Eli, Allie, Jenna, and of course, the popular jock, Drew Torres. This particular class is low-key my favorite, and I truly believe they attended Degrassi for about 27 years. While they dealt with a lot, it was kind of similar to our last group of kids. They just amplified it a notch. Some of the things they dealt with, which mostly were Drew and Claire, quite frankly, gang violence, CTE, not being able to figure out who your baby daddy is, losing a baby, teen marriage, sexual harassment in the workplace, domestic violence, stabbings, death via texting and driving, transgender issues, addiction, kidney transplant surgery, cancer, bipolar disorder, homophobia, getting blowjobs in the boiler room at school, and much more. Okay, so now, if you've never seen a Degrassi episode, you're probably thinking, that has to be it, right? No parent would ever send their kid to this school again, right? It seems like a horrible school, and you're just giving me a very generalized rundown. You're wrong. People keep sending their kids to this school. Now we've reached the next class in our Netflix original class. We've got Maya, Zig, Tiny, Grace, Zoe, Tristan. There's a lot more. Let me tell you about just some of the things this group deals with. Squatting because you're homeless, gang violence, depression, suicide, sexting, drug abuse, sexual manipulation, cystic fibrosis, lung transplants, blatant racism, white privilege, terrorism, bomb threats, butt implants, cyberbullying, swatting, a school bus being overturned and injuring many students, including putting one in a coma, which is ironically, as mentioned earlier, not our first coma on the show. What's nice about Tristan's coma, not that anything is nice about Tristan being in a coma, is that we actually see him come out of the other side of it, which we didn't really get to with Terry. So that's a thing. The storylines on this show are wild and far-fetched, and even the ones that aren't far-fetched have me screaming at my TV set. I'll be like, Zig, don't kiss Zoe. She's manipulating and calculating and using you to get back at Grace for not being a lesbian. But of course, he does kiss her, and he dates crazy psychopath Esme, and it's all gross. The wildest storyline I can remember happening in my high school was that one time this kid, we'll call him Toxic Chris, was dating this girl, we'll call her Lex, and she got another guy's phone number, so to make him jealous, he asked my friend if she wanted to go bowling with him. They went bowling. They had a very G-rated bowling outing. Then the couple reconciled, and we all moved on with our lives. It felt highly dramatic at the time, and even being in it, feeling that tense drama around our friends that this was happening, not even close to what these Degrassi kids are dealing with. The storylines on Degrassi have so many plot holes and continuity problems, and over 14 seasons there's so much repetition that it can very easily get boring. Like, oh god, another girl is pregnant. And above all else, like I mentioned earlier, I can't understand how this school has not been shut down multiple times. I also don't see a support system in any of these kids' lives, even the ones who we don't get the backstory line saying that they live in group homes. There's just no one around these kids at any given time. All that being said, this is the Canadian soap opera of our lives, and it took me on a journey I never thought I would complete. I'm thrilled to be on the other side of this mountain, and I proudly give it 5 out of 5 stars and will forever have nothing but respect for Aubrey Graham, even though I'm like 5 years older than him. Whatever it takes, I recommend watching the rest of Degrassi on Netflix. All right, I'm out.
Wow, that was some really groundbreaking journalism. A lot of investigation, a lot of research went into that. And I am just grateful for people who seek the truth and people who focus on the facts the way that Jesse just did. So thank you, Jesse Konevsky, for that quarantine segment, Canadian edition. And let's get back to our show.
Today on the pod, we wanted to talk about a problematic love story. Devin, 500 Days of Summer. I just want to say this, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it. I remember when it came out, the year was 1994. No, I'm just kidding. I think it was 2009. Am I correct? 500 Days. Because I saw it in theaters.
I don't know.
It is a 2009 American romantic comedy drama film. I loved it. I thought it was great. And don't worry, I'm going to let you speak on this. But I thought it was actually really good. I thought it spoke to male narcissism. I thought it spoke to like fantasy and relationships and missing red flags. Everyone I met who saw this movie had an extreme opinion about it. So they either loved it or hated it. They either hated him, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, or they loved him and thought he was so cute, and they hated Zooey Deschanel. I really found it reflected the romantic life of whoever was talking. So this guy who was a friend of mine was kind of this like curmudgeon, like short, like guy who always felt like girls didn't look at him. And he was like, she's the worst. I hate her. I hate her. And I was like, wait, do you just feel like she's someone who's like rejected you because she like rejected Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Right.
But I thought it like, I feel like it's sort of how do you say Rorschach test?
Cucumber? It's Rorschach test.
Escalade? Escalade? Sorry, that's how we pronounce it in España. but
in España, we say Rorschach.
So, Devin, please go into, as you put down in our notes, the 500 reasons why you fucking hate this movie.
Okay, so I just want to make a brief statement. As they say in the Kristen Wiig movie, Welcome to Me, I would like to read from a prepared statement. And I'm quoting myself here when I say, 500 days of summer, more like 500 days of being an incel.
Okay. It honestly needs so much work, and it's not a joke. It's just how you feel right now. So what I want to say is the anger comes through 100%.
Okay, so I saw this movie in high school also, and I remember thinking it was good, but I also remember that I had no framework for love or affection because no one had a crush on me, and I had a hard time in school, and no one liked me. So I was like, whatever, I guess this is what romance is like. Then I remember I watched it again a few years ago, and I was like, wait, this is the movie that everyone was saying was so good? Like, this movie is fucked up. It is fucked up. But then when we decided to do this episode, I was like, I'll rewatch it again because maybe I was going through a hard time when I watched that. Like, it was after the 2016 election. Maybe I was like being oversensitive. I rewatched it and I was like, yeah, this is actually so toxic and harmful. I can't even believe. The only way that this movie is redeemed for me is if it's specifically supposed to be a parody of incels. Like, that's the only thing that would make sense to me.
Okay, well, first we need to discuss the characters a little bit. So Joseph Gordon-Levitt is obviously a creative executive for a greeting card company. And I believe Zooey Deschanel is an artist.
No, she's an assistant. It's a Me Too. She's the assistant. She just gets hired as an assistant. It's a Me Too. She gets hired as an assistant, and then immediately all the men in the office start talking about how hot she is. And I'm sorry, but I have to just read a conversation that they actually have after Zooey Deschanel gets hired. Is that okay?
Yes, I'll go back and forth with you. So you be Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I'll be his friend.
Do you see what I'm pointing to?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Joseph Gordon-Levitt stares creepily at Zooey Deschanel at work.
Dude, I hear she's a bitch.
Really?
Yeah, Patel tried to talk to her in the copy room. She's totally not having it.
Well, maybe she was just in a hurry.
And maybe she's an uppity, better than everyone, super skank.
Damn.
I know, she's pretty hot.
That sucks. Why is it that pretty girls think they can treat people like crap and get away with it?
Centuries of reinforcement.
You know what? Screw her. I don't care if she wants to be that way. If she wants to be that way, fine. So this is from an award-nominated screenplay, but it reads like it's from a subreddit where men exchange plastic surgeon recommendations and tips on how to murder the girl who said no to being their prom date. Like, this is not okay.
That is actually crazy, and I can't believe that's really from the movie.
This conversation is started because while she was doing her job in a copy room, a man tried to hit on her while she was doing her job, a man who was above her at her company, and she ignored him. And they're saying she's an uppity super skank and screw her if she wants to be that way, fine. Like, is this the 1950s? Is this Mad Men? Or is this like an indie hipster hit that everyone is like, beloved, JGL is the nice guy. I love JGL. Zooey Deschanel's a fucking bitch super skank. Like, no wonder there's incels. No wonder women get attacked and stalked.
All right.
Like, all right. Literally.
Okay.
Also, let me just say that in the intro, they say that Zooey Deschanel is the average height and weight, and they give the numbers 5'5 and 121 pounds. 121 pounds is not the average weight for a woman. Fuck you.
It's the average weight for an actress in Hollywood.
You motherfuckers.
When the movie came out as a trailer, it hadn't even come out yet, but when the trailer was circulating, my friend called out. She was like, wait, are they supposed to be in love because she knows the lyrics to a Smith song? Because right. They're in the elevator, and he's listening to his janky 90s headphones where the music blares out. And she's like, oh, are you listening to the Smiths? And he takes off his headphones and he's like, what? She's like, to die by your side, what a heavenly way to die. And then walks out of the elevator and he goes, wow. So he's in love, which also reminds me, I had an experience at work the other day. I had an experience at work the other day, which a guy I did not know. He was actually a COVID testing guy who was helping clean the area where we were working to make sure nobody infected anyone. And he looked up from working, stared at me, and just went, a whole new world.
Love.
And I went, what? And he went, that song stuck in my head, you know? A whole new world. And I went, love. Oh. And then we just stared out the window together, me not knowing what the fuck was happening, and him saying, anyway.
I love that. That's so cute. And
so I should have, when he left, I should have been like, oh my God.
He probably thinks you're a super skank uppity bitch because you didn't hit on him in that moment.
I didn't sing along to the Aladdin theme song with him.
Another conversation from this movie that is deeply upsetting is that, so he's like, I hate her stupid skank, screw her. Then she says she likes the Smiths, and she said she likes like one of the same movies as him. And he's like, oh my God, she's not like I thought at all. She's amazing. She's a pixie dream girl. She's like unlike any other girl because she actually has fucking interest, and she's smart, and she's funny. And girls are never like that. They're always super skank, screw bitches. And I fucking hate them usually. And this girl's actually special. So then he like likes her. And then they are in the elevator again at work, people going to work, a business place. They're in the elevator at work, and he asks how her weekend was, and she says it was good. And he takes from that, like, he presumes that she had sex with someone over the weekend because she said her weekend was good. So he gets upset and says, quote, it's over with summer because she had sex with someone over the weekend. So AKA she's a slut. And all I have to say to that is please, please, sir, go to therapy, intensive therapy, reduce your harmful impact on the world. You are what is wrong with America. You are probably at the coup on the Capitol, and fuck you.
If I met someone who liked Tracy Chapman's Fast Car as much as I do, which is a lot, I would be like, great, you have a working set of ears and a working heart. But I wouldn't think, oh my God, this is the guy for me.
Right.
I just think it's weird that when people estimate other people based on music interest, and you know, Devin, if like Matt did that to you, like you guys probably wouldn't be together because you still listen to Selena Gomez's, you know, 2012 work.
I don't think I've ever had matching music taste to someone I've dated because
that would have been a seventh grade girl.
It would have been someone who is a member of the Camp Rock Superstans Facebook page. And that's not usually men in their 30s, But yeah, I mean, I just, this whole thing is just like this guy having extreme reactions to anything this girl does. And it's very upsetting and scary. And she does seem like avoidant, but also like she has boundaries. She's honest with him. It's like we talked about on the Obama's Other Daughters episode. Like, is it a fuck boy if you're, or a fuck girl if you're being completely open and honest about like right. your boundaries? Like, she's saying she doesn't want to be in a relationship and she doesn't like being in monogamous relationships. And then they break up and she meets someone that she really likes and she gets married to him. Like, this is another thing. Like, there's this whole narrative of like women changing their minds are teases, they're crazy, they're liars, they're like all this stuff. And it's like, there was this storyline on Bravo Summer House last season where this girl had... Paige had like made out with this guy in the house and then she like decided she wasn't into him and she started dating someone else and all the guys in the house like freaked out and were like, you're a tease, like you gave mixed messages. And she's like, no, I'm actually allowed to like make out with someone and then decide I'm not into it, like that's totally fine. Just like Summer is allowed to not be into relationships and then meet someone that is the one for her and decide to be in a relationship with them. Like, but in this movie it's like, how the fuck? Like, she didn't want to be with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and then she wants to be with someone else? What a psycho tease bitch. And it's just like such harmful narratives that they're okay. like promoting.
But don't you think they call this out later in the movie when he goes on a date with a girl and she basically talks to him about Summer and she's like, so she said she wasn't looking for a serious relationship. And she basically goes through all of these reasons why he is in the wrong. Because I feel like that was at least them being self-conscious, or that was them having a conscience or giving him a point of epiphany where he realizes that he was the one who was driving this narrative of their relationship. And my favorite part of the movie is when he has a vision of how a dinner party is going to go, and it's called Reality Meets Expectations. So in the reality, her apartment isn't as nice as he thought it was going to be. The party isn't as glamorous. And expectations, it's super fancy. They talk the whole night, just them two. In reality, she has like a boyfriend or a fiance there. And in expectations, they're like making out by the end of the night. So I feel like that, at least for me, I could really identify with, because I don't have this experience anymore because I go into parties like knowing exactly how much time I'm going to spend there and I can't wait to go home. But I remember being in my early 20s, going to parties and just having this vision for how the night would go. Right. And my teens, I mean, God, I would like spend more time getting ready than I would usually even spend at the party, because I had that expectations, you know, and those were mine. Those were completely mine. The person who I was going to meet had nothing to do with them and didn't owe me anything. So I guess that was something I found interesting, because he thinks that she owes him something. And, you know, when he goes on the date with that girl, she's basically telling him like, no, she didn't.
Right. No, I did write down like in my notes that I did relate to him at certain points, and I was like, am I an incel? Because like I actually do relate to him sometimes, and I do like get the expectation reality thing. I do get being obsessed with someone and like not being able to handle that they might not feel the same way. And I do get like creating these narratives based off like one interaction, but I just think like they take it so far. Like, it's like, If a woman had written and directed this, it could have been self-aware, like you're saying, in a really funny way. But because it was like so male gazy and like,
yeah, that's true,
so male to me, it just like wasn't it. Like, it's like they needed to have commented on how extreme his views were. Like, they needed right. to have commented on how crazy it is to call a woman a super skank because she won't flirt back with her coworker while she's making copies at her assistant job that's entry level and very stressful. And like, he says something about like how women dressed right in the
60s. Number 17.
Yeah. He says girls knew how to dress in 1964 and says who okayed the way women dress now, and how when women get tattoos and carry dogs in their purses, it basically disgusts him. And then Zooey Deschanel is like, well, I kind of want to get a butterfly tattoo. And he's like, ew, really? And having had a boyfriend before who like got upset because I got a tattoo, awful. Like, I went and got a tattoo, and it was like a really, like, it was to celebrate a milestone, and I did it with my friends and I was excited about it. And I just hadn't even thought to ask my boyfriend if that was okay, because it wasn't up to him. It just didn't occur to me. And we hadn't talked that day, and it was like a split second decision to do it. So I just told him afterwards, and he was like, wait, you did that without telling me?
Disgusting.
Like, what is it of? And I was like, wait, you think that that has anything to do with you? Like, fuck you. And so this just brought back that. But so I'm like, he's so antiquated and sexist, and like, he's so flawed that if it was supposed to be a commentary on that, a lot more would have had to been commented on, besides like, he's way too overly romantic and he fell in love right. when she said she didn't want to be in love. Like, no, he is like sick. Like,
yeah, it should have been more like how she breaks up with him is sort of like on the fly, but it should have been more about how it isn't attractive when someone's in love with the fantasy of you rather than the you. I mean, I dated some guy who would tell me stuff like, you need to grow out your hair and you look so pretty in dresses.
No,
and
no.
And it's something that still sticks with me because it was sort of my first formative relationship. And I thought that was him like really being in love with me, but really it was him idealizing this version of me that I just wasn't, that wasn't me. And it was very controlling. And so, yeah, I think that he's constantly upset, just like expectations meets reality, that she's not matching this like version of herself that he's built out. And I mean, also it's like how women dress. Like, have you fucking looked at yourself? Like, guys, yeah. I was watching The Godfather the other night. Oh my God, Al Pacino is so fucking hot in that movie.
Okay, wait till you get to Godfather Part 2 and young Robert De Niro, so
insane.
Fucking insane. Hot.
It's absolutely crazy pants. I could not stop looking at him. And they're wearing those pants and those suspenders. But looking at it, I was never like, oh, why do guys dress like this now in their t-shirts and their jeans? Because it's comfortable and we've evolved as a society.
And because we weren't raised to think that we had any authority over men's bodies and what they do.
Yeah, exactly. It's also funny because, I mean, you've spoken about this a lot before, but how women think rejection is totally normal. If I tried to hit on a guy in a copy room and he wouldn't talk to me, I'd be like, so he's so much cooler than I am. I would never be like, whore.
Okay, but also here's the thing. If you had said that, like if you had gone to a group of people and been like, oh my God, I just tried to hit on Richard in the copy room and he wasn't having it. I think he's like a super asshole douche. Everyone would be like, okay, so Caroline is crazy and she probably has a personality disorder and she's psycho cling, stage 5 clinger.
Like, we also have to talk to HR because I think she's going to kill someone.
Right. And it's like when men do it, like it's completely normal. And it's like, that's so, or when men do it, it's like, wait, they're so romantic. Like they wanted to hit on you when you were working. Like that's a compliment. And it's okay. Like,
I also want to talk a little bit more about Zooey Deschanel's character in that
yes.
I'm thinking about the scene where she's making out with him in the copy room. Like all of a sudden she just turns around and makes out with him. And visually it's a beautiful scene. Like it's very quiet and they're just kissing. And my friend, the same guy who was like, I hate her. My friend at the time when it came out, he said that he cried watching that scene. And I was like, that was another indicator that I was like, you're going through something that has nothing to do with this movie. But besides that, the character was so vacant, like nothing going on. I couldn't tell you one thing about her except that she likes the Smiths and she dresses like Zooey Deschanel.
I hated the way she dresses and I totally agree. She's like the epitome of when men write women. Like
the Manic Pixie Dream Girl. She's the Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
Even the karaoke scene, like she chooses this like cutesy like 60s song that no one's ever heard before and she has like a planned dance to it, like it's such like a fantasy, like she's like shoo, like doing this 60s dance and I was like, this is not an any woman I've ever met. Like any woman I've ever met is like really fun and would do like a fun song like Total Eclipse of the Heart and have a really good time, not be like a shoo, and then like right after that they at the karaoke bar they ask her if she's quote a lesbian or a man since she said she doesn't want a boyfriend.
Wow. I would be but, like, no, it's because I'm in quarantine from COVID.
By the way, the only other character trait that she has besides liking the Smiths is that she likes Ringo Starr more than the other Beatles. And they make it like a huge plot point. Like he's like, you like Ringo? Nobody likes Ringo. I was like, does she have a family? Does she have, where's she from? What? Like, anything?
Well, yeah, I mean, she speaks and just even that like sort of melancholy, like, hey, way that Zooey Deschanel speaks, which, by the way, I think she's so charming. Like, that as an actress, I love New Girl. I think Zooey Deschanel is adorable. I love She and Him. I'm all for her.
No, but none of this is her fault at all.
We are in defense of her, but they don't give her anything. It's the male gaze. She's totally seen through his eyes. And it seems like the more you would get to know someone like that, the more upset you would be.
Yeah, and I do think it's fucked up that she was like trying to be his friend after she broke up with him. I don't think that anyone who does the breaking up should initiate the being friends. I think that that's a very harmful move.
So harmful.
So I think that was fucked up. And the fact that she like had him over to her house and was like, oh, yeah, I'm engaged. Like, that's fucked up. But at the same time, like, I think the majority of women would not do that. And I think like this was just some incel's vision of a woman that was like, and then she got engaged and she invited me over as if she was going to fuck me. And instead was like, I'm marrying someone else. Like, it's like, I don't think that happens often, but okay.
I love at the end when she, spoiler alert, is engaged and she's like, I fell in love because you told me that people could fall in love and I knew you were right. And I was like, is that the gift? If a guy said that to me, I would be like, go fuck yourself.
I know. If someone broke up with you and was like, you taught me that I can love someone else better.
Exactly. I'd be like, well, can I have a wedding gift from you then? Because I certainly earned it.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more True Romance.
I want true.
Welcome back to True Romance. Well, the movie ends with Lila Garrity from Friday Night Lights.
Woo woo.
What's her name? Mila?
Oof. Mila Kunis. No.
No.
It is Minka Kelly.
Minka Kelly.
When you name your kid Minka, you're asking for a hottie.
Yeah, so she's in the end the girl that comes into his life. And I just want to say she also stars in a movie on Netflix called The Roommate, where she is stalked by Leighton Meester. And I would recommend that movie. And I think that movie is less harmful to gender stereotypes than 500 Days of Summer. Okay.
That movie looks so bad. I have to watch it.
I love it. It's so the best part about that movie is that Minka Kelly's character is a fashion student. And the way that they like make it clear that she's into fashion is that she wears a fedora all the time. And she like walks around and she gets into Billy Zane's fashion design class, even though she didn't sign up for it. Because Amazing. Like as soon as she walks into the classroom, he's like, I like your style. Like, you can be in here.
What kind of hat are you wearing? It's like, I designed it.
It's a pinstripe fedora. It's so funny. I love it.
Billy Zane getting cast in anything is already funny.
I know. He had so much potential and then. I don't know what happened, but I'm sure he's fine.
Well, I think that this whole story is a really interesting example about how romanticizing women or thinking of women as princesses or these magical creatures. Also, the flip side of it is that when you're gravely disappointed that they're human beings, you can become a monster.
Yes, totally agree. And I think that I don't really have a final thought, but I'll just say, like, I'm sorry I got so activated about this. And sometimes I like really over villainize things that I don't like. So sorry if that's what I'm doing, but I just got really annoyed. And I was just like, you know what? Like, I'm so fucking sick and tired of like men. Just, I don't know.
No, it's really hard. It's really. I do have faith that there are good guys out there. I had two random experiences recently that were really both so bizarre and in their own ways funny. One of which was I was watching a TV show and you can't really see the narrator's face in the show. I hope I'm not like hinting at it too much. Anyway, I was watching a TV show and I slowly realized as I was enjoying the show, that I knew the guy who had made the show. And I had actually hung out with him when I was like 19 and 20. And everyone in our crowd at the time, none of which I hang out in anymore, were talking about this guy. And they were like, he's a genius. He's so brilliant. He's so amazing. And I was like, I really don't see it. And he would do really obnoxious little hipster things. Like when we'd all be hanging out, he'd suddenly take out a notebook, write a few things in it, and then put it back in his pocket. Nope. And I was like, fuck you. Like, what the fuck are you saying about us right now in your fucking diary? He would also...
Bringing out a moleskin is a red flag.
I also have to say, for his benefit, that I was either stoned or drunk for these years most of the time. And at one point, I was at a party with him and I was really fucked up. And they said that everyone said they were going to go on the roof. And I said, where's the roof? Is it upstairs? And everyone looked at me and said, yeah, the roof's upstairs.
I feel like that's something I would still say in sobriety.
I was so embarrassed. Anyway, yeah, so I'm watching this show and I'm just thinking of all the times that I acted a sincere fool around this person. Like, oh, wow, he's exhibiting all this success. And yet last time I saw him, I was at a bar and he told me that he was having a miserable time. I was that awful mix of like angry and embarrassed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I was like, oh, this hipster that I always thought was kind of a joke. I literally referenced him on the podcast before because I think it was the London episode. And I was talking about being at a bar with a guy. And when I asked him what he had been up to, he said, I've been directing commercials, but I'm first and foremost a storyteller. And when he said that, I laughed because I was like, you're not alone there, buddy. And so I was angry and embarrassed, angered at his success because I'm selfish, and also embarrassed because I was like, why? Like, if I ever saw you again, you would think I'm the same dumb 20-year-old, 19-year-old. So that was one of my experiences with men.
But the truth
week.
Is, like, if he, anyone who thinks that, like, anyone who sees someone from the last time they saw them was in high school or college, if you really think this person is still the same person they were in high school and college, something's wrong with you then.
Yeah.
Like, no one is completely stable, their best self in high school and college. And as I said to you, Carol, this is how I feel about all my friends. Anyone who doesn't think you are cool sucks. Like, I don't want anything to do with them. I don't care what their opinion is on anything because they are wrong about something so blatantly obvious. And I wish I had felt that way. I wish I had like really practiced that more in high school and college because I feel like I was still so insecure that I was like social climbing and stuff. And I wish I had just been like, no, my friends are the fucking best. And if anyone disagrees, then like, fuck you and you're wrong.
That's how I feel about you. Yeah.
So if he's like, oh, that was that girl who like was high in college, then he's like a psychopath. Fuck him.
I'm sure he's like very nice. He just seems, I mean, it's so funny because I had a really big crush back then on this one guy. And whenever I think about like, quote unquote, the guys who got away, this one guy, I'll say his name is Hans. Wait, that's the name of our producer.
What? Oh, my God.
Yes,
speaking of Me Too workplace problems.
I'm in a Me Too Hans.
Did you hit on Hans in the copy room and he said no?
I'll say his name is Hans. No, I'll say
okay,
his name
Hans
is
a super skank because he did not give in to you hitting on him in the copy room.
I'm going to say his name is Lars. I remember looking at him, this guy, across a bonfire one night, and we just made eye contact for the longest time. And he had been somewhat hitting on me. And I had a boyfriend. He had a girlfriend at the time. And so I was so charmed. He was so handsome. He does not have any social media because the world is trying to hurt me. But we just stared at each other from a bonfire. And I'm not being self-centered when I say, like, we're both like, okay, this is something. And when at a party one night, I was dancing in a dance circle and he was too. We weren't dancing together, but his girlfriend walked up to him and tapped him on the shoulder and was crying. And she was like, you always do this when she's here. And I was like, wow, I'm at the center of drama right now. And so I've always thought of him as like the guy who got away because he was actually like really cute and really smart and really funny. But then this speaks to 500 Days of Summer. After watching this TV show and because all these guys sort of ran in the same crowd, I looked Lars up online trying to sort of find him, and I found an interview he did with this TV show guy, and it was so pretentious and so annoying that I was like, I do not know this person. I have thought of him frequently, at least once a year, thinking about whatever happened to Lars, like that one guy who I had this weird connection with at the wrong time. And I do not know who he is. I just have this vision of him. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you summered him.
I summered him. I do not know who he is. He could be a complete loser. Everyone has their own shit. You know, he has shit. And romanticizing someone inevitably sets us up for disappointment. Anyway, I'm definitely going to still stalk him. I don't know why I'm acting like I had some epiphany where I would stop.
I know. Yeah, I mean, I've like had crushes in college and high school that I was like, I actually am in love with this person and I can't believe the universe is working against us in the sense that I am actively having a mental breakdown due to substance abuse, so they don't want to be around me, and it's so unfair that that is the case. But looking back, I'm like, I didn't know anything about these people. Like, I completely made up everything I thought to be true about them. And a lot of them, like, I saw a guy that I was into in college when I was like 20 something. I like saw him on the street and I was like, oh my, like, that's what you look like, that's you. What? Like, no.
No. We also, Devin and I went to colleges that were predominantly female, so every male looked so attractive. And
I know.
I remember having that experience where I would see guys that I thought, like, oh, that guy's really hot. And then I would see him years later and be like, no, really, how fucked up was I those years? Because this is not the same.
I know.
The same guy, Lars, I mean, I just thought of it when you were like, I was so fucked up. The same guy, Lars, where I was like, I have such a big crush on him. I think he feels the same way for me, too. Once me and my friends went out with him and his mom, and she was from Finland, question mark. They were Norwegian, or so it was somewhere in that area. And she gave us this sort of old Nordic drink called Fisk. And what Fisk is fisherman's friend, the cough suppressant, and vodka. And me, already having a drinking problem, never a stranger to blackouts, and already nervous because I was in a group of new people, thought, sure, I drink about a half a Gatorade bottle full of it. I blink, and it's the next morning.
I know. Oh, God. Those are the worst nights.
The worst. And so, yeah, I, whenever I look back on those years, I don't know. I mean, I'm 30 and I'm looking back on years that I was literally 18, 19, 20, and I still have like this residual embarrassment, but I have to remember that nobody thinks about me except for you.
I don't think I don't have the residual embarrassment anymore. And it just took years of therapy and other types of self-work, but I really don't have it anymore. So if you're out there and you're like, oh my God, I got wasted and peed a stranger's bed and threw myself against a cement wall and sang I'm a Slave for You by Britney Spears in a bar in front of people and danced in a blackout, all things which I have done, if you're like, that was me and I'm so embarrassed, just know that it's possible to be freed of that shame, because I'm freed of that shame and I don't really know if I should be, but that's how I feel.
If you've ever, you know, walked out of the woods at a party with a stranger's dog on a leash, if you've ever danced in front of a party and been the only one dancing to...
Why is everyone obsessed with the fact that we openly talk about peeing the bed, by the way?
I do not know why people are so obsessed with me peeing the bed. I refuse
That's normal.
To believe that I'm the only person who had a drinking problem and I couldn't stop pissing the bed. It was, I swear to God, if I didn't pee the bed as often, I would still be drinking. If
I didn't pee the bed or become a demonic monster where my friends said that your eyes physically change and you become a different person, if any of those things didn't happen, I would still be drinking.
If literally one person would hang out with me, even when I was offering them free drugs and alcohol, as long as they would hang out with me, I would still be drinking. And, you know, also I would... including, you know, no bedwetting, you know, people liking me, family being supportive, etc. But alas, that's not what happened. And it's, you know, delivered me a beautiful life. I do need to get over those years of embarrassment. I guess I think it's the same with social media and stuff. I want to present myself to people as I'd like myself to be. And so I always want to go back and tell those people, like, no, I'm different. I'm not like I used to be. And I live in that sort of weird frustration. And I also...
But everyone knows that you're not.
I always think of Tyler Posey. Do you know that guy?
Yeah.
He's best known from the MTV series Teen Wolf. And I, for some reason, was watching a documentary about him and his former wife. And they were like high school sweethearts. And he said something to her, which was surprisingly wise coming from the mouth of the MTV's Teen Wolf star. But he said, I always wanted to be myself. When we were friends and I had a crush on you, I just wanted to be myself around you because I knew that if I was myself, you would like me. And that's how I felt my whole life. Like, if I can relax and be myself, I swear you'll like me. And yet I will not be myself. I mean, embarrassing myself around celebrities has been like the past 5 years of my life. And so I feel like then you get caught in like, is that me? Is the real me like this nervous person who says the wrong thing always at the wrong time?
Well, I have the same social anxiety as you, but it manifests the opposite way where like I feel this exact same way. But in when I'm nervous socially, I just don't speak at all. So like I'm like, if I would just like be normal and talk and say something funny, then everyone would know that I'm funny and normal. But instead, I just like sit there silently and like don't say a single word. And it sucks. But then like, I think that's all just like me being reminded of high school and forgetting that I have like progressed so much and done so many cool things that I'm proud of. And like, I believe in myself and I believe in you.
Likewise. I love you, Devin.
Okay, I love you. And thanks to our listeners. And thanks to Jesse for another quarantine.
We will catch you next time on True Romance.
Bye. All I am.